Can you hear the music?
Oh yeah, let's go.
Yeah. Not a lot of people can hear it, man.
We're ready to get pumped up.
We're ready to get fucking pumped. This makes me like want to fight people.
Let's go, man. Run through a brick wall.
Just like the Kool-Aid guy.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Need some spinach and we can be Popeye too, right? Like we can, you know? Try to get some more coffee too. My kids get up too much in the middle of the night, so I don't sleep well.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of On the Throne with Dick. And shout out to Senjin Boychuk. You know, everyone hates when I say that. You know, it's been 2 years since, you know, we got him to make that music for us. And I just keep shouting him out. Maybe it's mainly my wife. I'm going to be honest with you. She's like, you need to stop saying that. No one else has come forward and been like, hey, you need to stop. When I say everyone else or a lot of people, I really just mean her. And she's asleep right now. So, you know, she's not going to, you know.
Right.
Right. But when she listens back, you know, I fully expect it to come like 360. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good luck.
Yeah. You know, find that guy everywhere on the socials, man. He's still killing it. He said he's going to come on sometime soon, but I've been saying that for 3 months now. So who knows?
I'm going to write his name down. Tell me the name again. Here we go. I'm writing it down right now.
Boychuk. That guy, man, like he's not big on the socials. He doesn't care about the socials. It's not something he's not looking for anything. You know, he's just like, I'm making music and I don't care if 200 people watch me and or 50 people watch me. It doesn't matter. And that's huge. I love that guy. You know, but, you know, shout out to him and you know what? Shout out to Sean Patrick, this week's episode, you know, this week's guest, you know, host of the Just Called Dad podcast. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, how are you, Dick? Good to see you, man.
Fuck, dude. You know what? I'm pumped, dude. You know, waking up at 5:30, 5:45, mm-hmm. it usually bites me in the ass to record a podcast, right? I had this guy lined up for a couple weeks, and every time he's like, yeah, we'll do it at this time. And he's on your time zone too. And so I get up early, I wake up, I'm a little noisy. I might risk waking the family up.
Mm-hmm.
He never shows. So I decided to move on from that. And then I'm just like, how does 6 a.m. sound? And you're just like, well, 8 your time. And you're like, yeah. And I'm like, do I trust this one? You know,
trust it.
Yeah. It's
but you trusted.
I trusted. I laid it on the line.
You did. Well, and I've been up since I think like 4 here my time and tried to go back to sleep. But, you know, the Just Call Dad podcast is all about being a dad, right? And all the struggles and celebrations that go into being a dad. So lack of sleep and probably too much coffee are two things that that I am living my daily life. And we just got on here and I tried to get onto my computer. And for all the dads out there listening, I couldn't even log into my own computer. Just bought a brand new computer, pumped up for the podcast and spending some money. I'm like, oh, we're actually taking off, whatever. And I can't even log into it, you know, and for some reason I couldn't use that little, I got a MacBook Pro. It's incredible.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't use my thumbprint every other time I could. And I'm sitting there staring at my computer screen thinking I have no idea what the password is. And I don't know if it's ever happened to you, but man, I just felt really, I felt challenged in that moment, to not be breakable. That's the kind of the phrase, but I was like, okay, you know what? It's going to be a good podcast. I'm going to take a deep breath and, I'm not even using my normal podcast setup. So I guess, you know, it's one of those things as a dad, you never know what's going to happen, but we always have to be ready to just be our best self.
Boom. You know, it has happened to me actually when I first got the MacBook, same as you, right? I think it's a MacBook thing, yeah. Right? You got to call IT. They got to walk you through the steps. They got to be like, welcome to Apple. We're ready to fuck your day up. Man, it first happened before I think it was like 3 days into having this thing, right? I hadn't started using it for the podcast yet. It was crazy. And you said, you know, you're just getting on with the MacBook. I used to run and you're running it through your phone. You weren't sure how it was going to go. The whole first, I'd say year and a half. It's because it's been about a year now since I've had the MacBook. Coming up on a year. I used to run it all through my phone, right? Mm-hmm. The whole podcast, right? I would run it through my phone and I would have to go after every episode or before every episode, go and delete tons of gigabytes of pictures and videos off my phone just to be able to record.
Yeah, that's where I'm at right now. We just had that issue, right? We're just like trying to figure out if my phone has enough storage to even do this thing. because I think it's a, was it The Office? I don't know if you ever watched The Office, but Michael Scott has to have two phones when he's talking about his kids. And I've always thought about that. I was like, nah. And they're like, yeah, now that I have kids, I realize like you, that makes sense. Like, even if you've never been a sentimental person before, once you become a dad, dude, it messes with you in a good way. Like I'm so sentimental. Like, I got to take a picture of this, or I got to document this memory. And it's really not that important. But to me, for whatever reason, I'm doing that. And then I'm looking back crying. I'm like, why am I crying right now? You know? So I'm with you, man. You like, do I delete this picture? Do I delete that one? But like, to your point, being a dad and trying to manage everything, and not only that, but like the MacBook's pretty expensive, right? So like, when we have to invest in our podcast and things like that, especially when you're like kind of like, I don't know, it's called grassroots, probably, like you're just starting on your own, right? Like in my basement where I'm currently at, and sometimes I record episodes in my garage. Like, you know, it's like, it's one of those things where you just have to kind of get blueberry planted, you know what I mean? Like, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Oh yeah, man. And you know, like, speaking of grassroots, you know, you're saying in your basement or your garage, right? Like, this podcast, I work in the oil and gas industry in Canada. And, you know, so this episode, or not this episode, this podcast, right? Essentially, like, the first couple episodes I recorded at home on my days off, right? Mm-hmm. And then it got to, okay, well, I'm back at camp. And anyone that's listening that, you know, has spent any significant time in hotels or camp, they know the cell service sucks, right?
Yeah.
First, you know, the first 10 episodes, you know, audio was off. Audio, mm-hmm. everything was off. You know, there were times where, you know, I'd be in camp, and if I got to camp and recorded at the wrong time, you know, the Wi-Fi was shit on the best times. But, you know, you get like 50, 60, 70 people in there. This was a smaller camp compared to some of the bigger ones. You get like 70 people on the Wi-Fi. It just drags it right down. There's nothing. There are times, you know, in a hotel where I was staying in the wrong spot of the hotel, you know, where, you know, I'd go there and the Wi-Fi or the service would be no good, you know, and then I was on my phone too. So if I got a phone call, it would interrupt the podcast. Just send it, you know, but you know, it's a blue collar podcast, and, you know, rough and tumble, and the podcast, you know, like it very much went that way. Right. And then, you know, now that was on the phone, and now we figured, you know, ways around that, right? You got to learn your tech. You got to learn when, you know, what to do when shit goes sideways, like being a dad, right? Yeah. Changing a diaper, and, you know, it's a shitty one. And you know, as it's, the diaper's going back on, you got to change it almost immediately again, because, you know, you just maybe didn't get quite that band back and gone again, right? Or, you know, being a dad, you know, things go sideways on you all the time. You just gotta go with the flow. And you know, my job is very much like that too. So like, you know, I kind of just go with it. Nothing really bothers me. I'm pretty unbothered. But yeah, man, it's pretty wild how you made that connection. And like, you know, I'm just kind of sort of like, yeah, you're right.
Yeah. And that's really where a lot of this came from for me, was just like realizing that I'm not alone in many of the struggles that I go through, right, in life. And like, I think for a long time, I didn't want to admit that I struggled with things. I was like you. I'm like, I'm good. Until like there came a point where I just wasn't anymore. And I'm a guy that likes to have a lot of humor and laugh, because I think that like humor is the best medicine. But sometimes you have to be like, okay, I got to laugh, but also got to be real with myself and be like, all right, you know what? Like, I'm not like a failure just because something didn't go the way that like I had planned it to go. And I think like, I'm always cautious of like, okay, when I want to be like, I want to always make something better than it is, right? Or sometimes things are just tough, right? You go through some things, like whether probably on the oil rig for you or for me, like I'm an elementary phys ed teacher, and I work with like, I'm actually changing jobs, but for the last few years, I've worked with like 800 kids a week. So that means I teach 31 classes, 800 kids a week. And I'm trying to, you know, kind of pour into their life, right? I'm trying to help every kid that comes into my circle or into my world, while also raising three daughters at home, to the point that, you know, we're making. So it's like, you know, you never necessarily feel like you've got it, quote, under control, right? You had a reel where it was like, it posted trying to figure out if I'm like somebody, my boss wants me to fix it, and realizing I'm the one that needs to fix it kind of thing. I was like, dude, that's life, right? As a dad, or as a teacher, or as somebody who blue collar, I grew up in the blue collar family of tradesmen. So it's like, I'm the one that's where I actually just called that came from. As funny as that is, like, it came from calling my dad, because he fixes everything in my house and helped me through something. So like, you know, you gotta have somebody to call, but sometimes you're the one to call, right?
Yeah, man. You know who I call when shit goes wrong? My wife. You know, my wife, all the tools in the house belong to her. The barbecue awesome. Belongs to her. You know, she's a stay-at-home mom, right? And like I work away. Sometimes I'm gone for, you know, weeks, months at a time, you know, and you know, there has to be someone here to keep the fort grounded, right? And the kids whatnot, you know. Yeah, she's incredible, you know. The tools are all hers, and you know, I don't talk to my dad. I haven't talked to my dad for a few years, and you know, that sucks. So I live like, you know, I don't, in terms of kilometers, I think it's like 3,000 kilometers. So like, let's say, I don't know how many miles that would be, but like, I live like three provinces away. So I have like a 4-hour plane ride away.
Yeah.
So like he could help anyways, but you know, yeah, we've lived pretty far for quite a while, right? So but you know, he wasn't someone that I could count on anyways,
right?
Yeah. For a lot of things. So you know, it's basically just been her and I, you know, on our own for 20 years pretty much, just you know rolling with the punches and what's the word I'm looking for there, we've been improving life.
Yeah. Navigating. Yeah. I like the word navigating there.
Yeah, navigating. Like, navigating is good. Yeah,
we've because been like you don't know, like we don't have a roadmap for life, do we? Like we don't have like a, like you know what I mean? Like when you all these dad books and like sometimes you see like dad accounts out there like follow my seven step plan to like greatness, yeah, or whatever. And I'm like, if I followed that 7-step plan, I think I'd potentially pull every muscle in my body and like not like myself by the end of it. And like same with marriage and different things, like. And it's just about navigating life. And like when you're on the ocean shore, seas, you know, it's not like you're on the shore just sitting there relaxing. Like, yeah, as a dad, as a busy professional, like, dude, well done on shouting out your wife. That's absolutely right, man. I think relationships and conversation are the greatest tools to unlock the version of herself that might be hiding inside.
Absolutely, man. You know, like, yeah, well, you know, my wife, she's we've had a bit of a rough year though, right? So like I've been diagnosed with borderline personality disorder this year so far. And, you know, that's on mental health. It is. It's June, right? So it's Men's Mental Health Month and whatnot. But, you know, that can't be easy on her the last 20 odd years. She says she knew something was up, right?
Because,
you know, my grandmother said, you know, my dad's got something. My grandfather had something. And my grandmother told her, like, hey, you know, don't tell him, he's got to find out on his own, and you might scare him, right? And this year was a good time. I was kind of like spiraling a little bit, you know, with my schedule being a dad and whatnot. You know, I don't really know anything about borderline personality disorder, but it's quite scary. You're living rent free in your head all the time, right? And I had no idea what that was, right? And anxiety, my wife's got severe anxiety, and I used to just not make fun of her about it, but like, you know, not help the situation any. And it comes to, you know, turns out, you know, I also have anxiety. Some of those things that like I was, you know, experiencing, that's anxiety. When you step back and you watch, right, man, I was anxious in that moment. I was anxious in this moment, right? Yeah. And borderline personality disorder, man, is crazy. And, you know, I think about my kids, you know, and like how, you know, I want to be way different for them than, you know, my parents were growing up. And we had a bit of a rough year, and you know, so I've been in therapy a lot in the last couple months, you know, and you know, learning a lot of stuff. And my therapist is like, man, this sounds like this, and write this down, and then go talk to your wife about this. And my wife's
beautiful.
Yeah, that's all I've ever wanted. It's like, wait, what? You know, like,
yeah,
that's crazy, you know. And you know, it also coincides with, you know, I broke my ankle at work 3 months ago, right? So, you know, I broke my ankle, and I've talked about this a couple times in the last couple of weeks, but you know, a painful moment that could have, you know, brought me down.
Right.
I got to watch my daughter ride a bike without training wheels for the first time like a week ago, right? I got to go to my youngest daughter's, I got to go to her play school graduation, and I'm witnessing all this stuff and being a part of all this stuff. Working away, I don't get that, right? I come home for 7 days after, you know, a month on the road, and you know, I miss a lot. So, you know, it's been a pretty crazy experience, you know.
Yeah, and I think just to pause there and say congratulations on finding help, because I think that that's the point that I've navigated to, because, you know, in life we sometimes chase after so much, right? Like, I'm a chaser. I like to chase after things. I like to have a goal. I like to get things done, right? But like, when it comes to, I'm also somebody who has been able to understand what anxiety and panic attacks look like. When it comes to those things, there's no chasing those things. They chase you. And
Oh, shit.
so that's where I've been navigating. That's actually where the Just Call Dad podcast came from. It came from a panic attack. So I was having a panic attack. I didn't know what it was. I was stressed out at work. I was stressed out with my body. I was having weird physical symptoms, like my muscles would cramp, I would seize up. And I'm a dude that like to be fit, right? So like, I would run a half marathon. I just ran a half marathon for my daughter. We'll talk about being in the NICU. It was a half marathon at the NICU where she was. And so it was a special moment for me. So like, I had just done that. Like, I'm like, I'm good. I'm tough. I'm fit. And then all of a sudden, I was walking in. I'd felt weird, and I was walking in to pick my daughter up from school. A pretty routine thing after teaching 7 classes and about 180 students that I usually could do fine. And all of a sudden, the world stopped. And I talked about this moment a lot, and the world stopped on me, and I couldn't move. I couldn't function. And I went, you know, that was an interesting moment. I remember crawling my way into a bathroom stall, nobody around, nobody could see it, and saying to myself, "You're gonna die here. If you die here, what legacy do you leave?" And so that was, I was really thinking about it. And then I came back to, as weird as it is, Dick, I came back to in my truck, sitting there with my daughter in the back seat, not knowing how we got there. And I said to myself, "Okay, Sean, you need to get help, because you have been helping everybody else in your entire life, but you haven't helped yourself." And so I realized as I went through that process that anxiety and that panic live in a really similar space in your brain to competitiveness or competing. It's actually a very similar thing. And so anybody out there that's like resisting getting help or therapy, do it. The point of the Just Call Dad podcast is creating a resource bank for dads, but anybody really who could watch a video and watch something and say, "You know what? Like, I'm gonna go seek the help that I need." So I want to be a connective dot for people to know that they're not struggling on their own. People like yourself and people like me who have tried to tough it out. Because in our generation, I don't know how you were raised, but I have really good parents and a different experience. But my dad, you know, had a different experience. So he tried to make, you know, it's like a generational cycle, like you've talked about. And so my dad tried to better that, but we didn't talk to each other. Like, my dad and I didn't like sit down and say, "Hey, how you feeling today, bud?" No, he went out and he beat me in basketball, or he went out and he had me work with his with my hands. He would have me do electrical work and climb back in a little hole that nobody wanted to go in, and there were spiders and things. And that's the thing. And so like, that was his way of coping with the condition that is anxiety. And for me, my way of coping was, I'm going to help everybody possible. But then what I realized is there's a convergence point, and you realize it too. I got hurt. I didn't realize it was, I had an injury. I had an emotional injury, a physical injury. And I also didn't really understand the pressures that I was putting myself in day in, day out. So yeah, anybody listening to this that's like, "You know what? Like, I'm good. I'm good. I'm good." I'm going to tell you something. There's going to come a point in your life where you're not. And so who are you going to turn to? Or better yet, what are you going to turn to? And I refuse to be, you know, there's alcoholism that runs in my family. There's different things that run in my family. And I refuse to let that be my thing that I attach my healing to. There's nothing, I'm not blaming those things. And if people are doing those things, you know, everybody attaches their healing to something. And so also, we can't put people in shame, right, for doing certain things. But for me, I said to myself, "You know what? Like, I want to make sure I attach my healing to something that's truly going to bring me joy and bring me life."
Hell yeah. Hell yeah, man. I love that. My dad, you know, I didn't have a great childhood. Turns out, you know, I always thought, you know, yeah, it was a little rough. It wasn't that bad, you know, like it wasn't, you know, my dad didn't, you know, abuse the shit out of me or anything like that, you know, but like, no, man, there was other ways of abuse, right? And, you know, abandonment was a huge thing. My parents, they split up when I was six, right? And I stayed with my dad. I always thought my dad gave me the choice. I have a memory of when I was 6 years old, my dad walked into my room and he's like, "Hey, your mom and I, we can't be together no more. Who do you want to go with?" Right. And I'm like, "Well, my dad, you know, because like that's my dad." And I knew my mom wasn't capable, right? And I had two little sisters and that, you know, I barely knew. I was six. The two sisters, the youngest one was just born. She was maybe not even a year. And the other one was you know, maybe two. And so, you know, what the fuck did I know? Right. So I know. I choose my dad. You know, my dad's a cool guy. And turns out this past Mother's Day, so only a couple weeks ago, I went home for a visit. My sister got married, my baby sister, who was born much later. She got married, and I was at the park with my mom and my wife and my sisters, and I got to meet my nephew. And I was talking to my mom. I'm like, yeah, you know, I got a choice. Like, your dad wanted you for the child support, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he wanted mm-hmm. the money, right? And I'm like, what do you mean? What do you mean, right? And I'm like, shit, you know, I've always been under that impression that I was given the choice, but my dad came in, and I guess the way that it went, it was like, hey, who do you want to go with? And, you know, he kind of sort of, he was drunk at the time. Now that I remember, but he was drunk, right? Mm-hmm. He came in, he fought with my mom. They got into it. He's like, you know what? I got to go, right? And so they made the decision, and he came in, and he was very coercive about it, right? Yeah. And I'm like, shit, you know? And then, you know, lots of other things happened in my life, you know, that my dad took me to, he's a boomer. My dad took me to boomer ragers, like big parties and shit like that. Kept me like in a room or in a camper. And, you know, my dad was in a relationship with my stepmom at this point. And, you know, she was my next door neighbor when my parents were splitting up. And, you know, thinking back on it, you know, at my kindergarten graduation, my parents were very much together. Her son was not in any of my grades or my class or whatever. And my stepmom is in a picture in the background. Hmm. Right. And I was like, what the fuck, man? Yeah. You know, like, and then, you know, my dad had an affair with my brother's wife, you know, that went on for a little while.
You got some layers, brother.
What's that?
You got layers in your life, man.
Oh, dude. Right. And, you know, then my dad was with my stepmom, and he was cheating on her a lot. And then, you know, and then I always make the joke, you know, I wonder if my dad was proud of me for the kind of women I'd bring home. Right. Like, you know, like, yeah, that's my son, you know?
Yeah.
Well, years later, right, he was more proud of my sister. He was with what my younger sister's best friends. She was like 15, 16 at the time when they were starting to fool around that we know of, right? Mm-hmm. And they ended up, you know, my dad got married, was fooling around with her still. She found out, she left and moved the younger girl in, who is not that age anymore, but like, you know, it was just the pieces were coming together, right? And we think, you know, her two younger kids are my brothers, right? Like one of them is a year and a half right now, right? And it's like, shit, man, I could have a brother that's like 30 something years younger than me. That's crazy, you know?
Yeah. Well, and so, I think, you know, that everybody's got layers to their life, right? Like no one wouldn't know that about you, right? nobody would know that, but they would see the person that you are, and they would judge and evaluate you based on that. And that's what's hard, right? And that's what we do in our, especially as like men. I think men's mental health is big because here's the reality. Like we don't deal with stuff, right? We don't really, and this isn't any shade on, you know, men or difference between men and women. But like one of the big things I noticed, I have three daughters at home. Okay. And what I noticed with my daughters is they do a really good job of communicating with me. Sometimes too much. Like there's screaming, there's yelling. There's a lot of those things. And like, here's the reality. Like I don't do a good job. I will communicate. I'm more of a conversationalist. So like I will hear what somebody else says and then I will talk about it with them instead of saying, okay, here's how Sean feels, right? Or let me take my heart out and put it on a table. It kind of feels like open heart surgery. So I don't really want to do it. So I would rather be an echoer of people around me than let the echo from whatever the experience inside me come out. And I think that's really deep that you shared that. And I think a lot of men, even if their story's different, if they pause a little bit, they could talk about that as well.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I guess up until recently, I was sort of the same way, you know, and like, there are still times where, you know, I'm sitting there and I'm staring off into the abyss and my wife's like, what are you thinking about? And I'm like, nothing, nothing's on my mind right now. She's like, that's not what therapy's taught you how to do. You know, like, what are you thinking about right now? And then, you know, it takes me a couple minutes and I'm like, all right, well, you know what? Like, I was a little upset by this that happened today, or you said this. And she's like, oh, you know, like I wasn't trying to do that. And I'm sorry that you felt that way. And like, this is what I was aiming for. And, you know, which is a lot different than what I was doing to her. She'd be like, well, you know, this made me upset. And then I would try to like bring it back to me. Well, you know, this is, you know, mm-hmm. and like, no, you got to listen when they speak, right? Just mm-hmm. like they got to listen when we speak, right? And
that's right.
Dude, it's, it's nuts, but you said your dad tried to force you into do, you know, hands-on work, something that you didn't really want to do when you were a kid, right?
Right.
My dad, you know, my dad, he would sink his feelings into his work too, right? He owned his own metal roofing business, and he would pick up jobs on the side when he wasn't doing that. And I, you know, when we were a kid, we were on welfare. We were poor, right? And I think I was about 9, 10 when my dad, you know, he met someone that, you know, paid him $10 an hour to drive him to and from work, and he taught him this trade. And then my dad, like, oh, okay, and he learned it quickly, and then he started his own business. And my dad was self-made. Like, he made really good money, right? Blew it all, has nothing to show for it today. But like, that's how he handled his feelings. He dumped it into work, right? Mm-hmm. And when I was 11 years old, I got out of school for the summer. He's like, you're coming to work, right? He's like, mm-hmm. you're going to want something. And, you know, it was cool because, you know, I made a lot of money for my age. He paid me $50 a day, and I worked every day. I'd work 12 to 14 hours for $50, you know? And, you know, like, it got me out of the house. It got me, you know, learning the value of the dollar, what it takes to earn it. But like, I was 11, man. You know what I mean? Like, it's a good thing to learn, but then you took away, you know, my childhood. I had no control, right? I go to school all day, have no control there. And then, you know, summer vacation where I'm supposed to be a kid, I have no control for 14 hours a day. I'm under someone else's control. And then, you know, I'd go home, I'd live under his roof, his control, right? And, you know, he said to me one time, he's like, well, you're not a worker. He's like, you're not going to be a worker, you know, like you're just not that kind of guy. Right. And what do I do now? I work over 100 hours a week. You know, there's times over the last 7 years where I put in, you know, in an 8-day period, I put in 170 hours at work. Right. And there's only 168 hours. It was camp. Right. So, I, you know, and being on site, you could have a little nap in the truck or whatever.
Right.
So, like, I proved him wrong, didn't I? Fuck yeah. I can work. Right. And I just grind. I grind. And, you know, to everyone else around me, wow, this guy's motivated. This guy has a work ethic. Well, is it that? Or is it, I hear my dad say I'm not a worker and I'm here to prove him wrong. Right. And there are times where, you know, I'm out there working and, you know, 12 hours has gone by and I haven't taken a break. I haven't come out for food, or I eat my food on the go. Right. Well, up until about 2 years ago, I stopped doing that 2 years ago, right? I was like, you know what? Like, I need a break. I need to eat. I need to drink. Because at 12 hours, yeah, everyone's like, oh, man, that guy goes, you know?
Right.
And my body's falling apart, right?
100%.
I'm not nourishing it during the day. I'm not taking a break, right? So, you know, come out and be like, and my coworker's like, hey, don't be Superman.
Right.
Go, drink, go get somebody, take a rest, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I started doing that. And you know, what I found was nobody's watching me. Mm. Nobody gives a shit. The only one that's watching me that really is the boss. He's like, yeah, that guy can do that. And because he's shown me he can do that, he's going to do that every day. Right. And so,
right.
You know, there was things like that. And then, you know, 7 months ago, 8 months ago, I got a new job. And, right. So I got that. And, you know, there's a lot more. Hey, go take a break, man.
Yeah.
You know, go take a break. No one cares. Right. Just go take a break.
Right.
Not as many people care about your work ethic as you think. It's a pride thing. It's an ego thing. It's on you.
Yeah.
Right. So I started doing that. And, you know, there's a shelf life to blue collar work. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a young man's game. Well, it doesn't have to be a young man's game. Take care of your body. I do chiropractor, physio.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, I have to do physio now. Chiropractor, massage, eat right, you know, take care of yourself. Man, I got two daughters and we're trying to have another kid. You know, there has to be some longevity in this, you know? So yeah, we're learning. It might be a little late, but it's never too late, I guess, unless you're dying. But like, you know, we're learning.
Isn't it cool how we can see that change in where we began a process and where we are? And then what I love that you shared there, and this is something that I talk a lot with my guests on my podcast about, I like Marvel comics. Okay. I like Marvel movies. I like things like that put me in those situations. I like Lord of the Rings. I like Star Wars. I like these stories because I grew up in that generation of like, there's an origin story to every battle.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's an origin story to every battle. And so that's a phrase I would love if a dad's listening to this to like write it down and journal this. There's an origin story to your battle. So I don't know what your battle is today. Your battle might be just getting up out of bed. For anybody who's wrestled with depression, who's wrestled with generational depression, like you've seen your grandma and your grandpa have depression, you've seen your dad have it, and they would label it differently. They wouldn't call it depression. They'd call it, oh, they're just sad today, right?
They're just tired. I work.
They're just tired, whatever. So like just to there's an origin story to everyone's battle. And everyone's battle doesn't have to look like Star Wars, right? Where we're having this intergalactic battle. But instead, it can look like literally just saying, why am I working so hard right now? Like what is the origin of this? And I've often talked about this on my podcast, and this is something you just brought up, and I'd love to share this with you and your listeners, is when I have an emotion or an experience, right? So when I feel a feeling, I tell myself, you are the observer, not the sensation. So again, you're the observer, not the sensation. Whether that's this idea of like, I feel tight, my body feels tight. Well, observe it. Take a breath. I work with a ton of people on my podcast that are like well-renowned breathwork experts. And it's so interesting because I'm not. So like, that's the goal of the podcast, is to talk to people that know more than I do, because people are afraid to ask questions like, why do I feel this way? So I'm the observer, not the sensation. But also I've been asking myself recently, why is this in my story today? So why is this moment, why is this emotion, why is this person, why is this feeling, why is it in my story today, right now? And if I do that, sometimes it really combats the anxiety that comes from that. Because sometimes I'll say, you'll go from the why me to the why not me transition.
Yeah.
And that's something that I'm really working on as somebody who is trying to figure out the origin for our battle. Because oftentimes, your story is one that I'm sure people can resonate with, and so is mine, where I'm an only child, right? I'm an only child that grew up in a family that my dad, my mom and dad they're incredible, right? They both came from situations that weren't great. Like my paternal grandfather died at 37 from cancer. He was a charismatic guy. We share a lot in common, but you know, he had four daughters. I have three. He was an alcoholic. I am not. And I've always spent most of my life, to your point, trying not to be that because of that. But then that brings in a lot of judgment. That brings in a lot of shame that you put on other people. Like, how could you do that? I don't do that. Right. But here's the reality. Everybody's journey is different.
Everybody's origin story. Right.
And so we have to be cautious and understand that each origin story will lead us along this path. And if you think about it, if we want to go crazy and talk about Lord of the Rings or Star Wars or things like that, think about each character. We're all a character in that story.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I might not be Frodo, right? Like I might not be, even if I want to be that, I might be another character in the story, right? Let's hope we're not Sméagol, like right? But like, you know what I mean? You understand what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I'm more like Gimli myself. I'm short. I got a beard. You know, I try to be funny. I got an eye that's lazy sometimes, you know?
There you go. Well, like, don't you love to identify yourself with a character? Because we all want to identify with something. Okay. And that's what I write kids' books about. So like, we wrote the book called The Emotional Shoes. And that book is something. So like a NICU, I don't know if anyone's listening who's never seen a NICU. A NICU is, it looks different places that you go, but basically it's this place where they put the baby right before you can take them home. So my wife was in the hospital for a month and a half before giving birth to my youngest. For the entire 7 months leading up to her birth, we went to weekly appointments. Weekly checkpoints is what my brain called them. And like, we would go there and I would wait for them to tell me that the baby wasn't going to make it, because she had like a 10% chance at the beginning and the percentages got higher. But as the percentages got higher, I didn't realize my anxiety got worse, right? I was like, I'm good. I'm good. I'm going to keep teaching. I'm going to keep coaching. I'm going to raise our other two daughters. And I just kept going, you know, guns a-blazing, you know, like I was going into battle, like those examples that we gave. And, you know, she gave birth after being there for a month and a half while I was coaching track and trying to drive from the hospital back and forth with our other two when my parents could watch them. You know, because like I said, I've grown up in this family that's very supportive. But there's pressure that comes with that too, right? You got pressure. And I got a sign back there that says plans, not pressure. Because in life, we want to have plans, not pressure. But I couldn't plan the situation, Dick. I couldn't plan what was going to happen. I had no idea. She called me three times, said, I'm going to give birth. She didn't. I'm going to give birth. She didn't. Then the third time, it's kind of like the, you know, the boy who cried wolf. You're like, is this the moment? And so it built up all this anxiety. You're like, ah, but I just flying in this Honda CRV because our cars were broken. I had no air conditioning. It's 90 degrees, middle of June. I'm driving, you know, oh my gosh. I'm like, please don't pull me over. Please don't pull me over. And I'm going. And I get to the hospital and there's a power outage. So I'm like navigating all this thing. I felt like I was on a scene from Star Wars, right? Like I'm like, and I get there and we get to meet our daughter and she's as big as my hand. She's 2 months early. She's 2 pounds. They rush her out the doorway. They say, you got to go with her. We'll take care of your wife. I'm like, hold up, wait, what? You know what I mean? So I go with my baby, Amelia, but like, I'm like, well, I'm not going to leave Laura, my wife. And I go through this doorway. And as I'm walking through this doorway, the nurse looks at me and says, today is her day one. Today is her day one. I'm like, what does that mean? And she's like, every day here in this NICU is worth so many more. And that like blew my mind. Like, I'm a man of faith, and I know the verse that says, you know, one day in his courts is a thousand elsewhere. So I understand that. But I was like, what do you mean? And so I learned about the NICU. I learned that I couldn't hold her right away. And so I sat in that chair and I'm like, I'm going to do something about this. Right. And so that's why I decided to write books. So to your point, we all attach our healing to something, whether it's, you know, time, whether it's substances, whether it's podcast, whether it's work. And that's the point that you were making earlier, which we can tie it all back into. And so it's like, if I'm going to, I know I need to heal, but I really want to attach it to something good.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I got a NICU story, but I want to touch on your origin story there for a second.
Let's go.
My 5-year-old daughter said to me the other day, we're walking to the park. I can only do a little bit of walking right now, my ankle, right?
Yeah.
So I was, the park's like 2 minutes away. We got to go through this little parkette thing. And there's quite a bit of homeless people in there right now, right? They're just hanging out. We're walking through. My daughter looks up at me and she's like, there's some homeless people here. I'm like, yeah. She's like, I wonder what their origin story is. Right. She's five. She's like, I wonder what these homeless people's origin story is.
Beautiful.
I'm like, well, right. Some people fall on bad times. Some people, you know, make bad decisions. Right. Mm. She's like, I wonder how many of these people's origin stories begin with drugs. I'm like, you're five. What are you doing? Right.
Yeah, how do you know this? Right. Like,
dude, yeah, no, she, okay. YouTube is a thing in our house that had to stop. Right. Mm. YouTube is, it's not good for kids, man. Like they get overstimulated. YouTube has been a problem. So, you know, they learn a lot of things. They've come to us and said a lot of things, 7 and 5 that, you know, 7 and 5-year-olds, what the hell? I look at my 7-year-old daughter and, you know, things my dad was saying and doing and showing me at 7 years old. And I look at my daughter and I'm like, she's so fucking innocent. You know, like there's some shit there that I don't ever want her to know that I knew that.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
And I can't believe, you know, my youngest, she's 5, she'll be 6 in, you know, well, she's 5 and a half, I guess. So she in, you know, 5-6 months, she'll be the age I was when my parents split up, right? Mm-hmm. And my oldest daughter is just a year out from that. Yeah. And I'm like, man, like I couldn't picture, you know, not being here every day, you know, or not being a part of their life anyway. So most of the time it's through FaceTime when I'm at work, right? And that's mind blowing, right? Like looking at where I was at that age compared to where they are. And you know, like I never wanted to be around my parents, you know, I was always off somewhere else. We get so annoyed sometimes because they never leave us alone. Well, no, they feel safe, they feel comfortable enough to be around us. Mm-hmm. We haven't shown them that it's an unsafe atmosphere or situation where they like, oh, I'm staying clear of that today, you know, where they just like, my parents are not in this room with me, they're in this room, they're doing their own thing, I'm gonna go put myself in that room too. And I love that. You know, it's taken me a long time to realize, you know my wife brought it up, like, yeah, we're their safe space, right? They want to be around us, right? And that's huge, dude. I love that. You know, that's incredible. Yeah, that's
beautiful, by the way.
Yeah, man. I there's been a lot of tears that have happened in the last 3 months, by the way. Like, you know, I don't really cry that much, but you know, tapping into your emotions and mm-hmm. figuring shit out is painful, but also liberating. And you know, TikTok has helped with this too, because when I found out I had something, we didn't know what it was yet. You know, I started seeing these videos and they came to me purposely. They're your phone listens, obviously.
I know.
I'm like, man, I feel like this, you know, like this makes me feel understood. And then afterwards, you know, being diagnosed with it, I started seeing those accounts more. I started following them on TikTok, all about borderline personality disorder. And what I thought could have been a very scary moment, you know, being, first of all, you're broken. You got, something's wrong with you. You're mentally ill, you know, which is nothing's wrong with that. But it could be scary. You could be very low and people could judge. Then you start seeing all these other people who have it. And then you start watching the videos and you're like, man, I think that way. I've gone through this. I've experienced that. And I'm like, man, I'm not alone. Right. This is not something here. Right. Like, you know, that's cool, you know? And, you know, the podcast, I talk about it on the podcast because, you know, a lot of people that listen, the safety guy at my work, he listens. He's like, man, I think like that. Mm-hmm. I have these things. Maybe I have that, you know? Mm-hmm. And now he's like, man, I'm not alone. Right. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of blue collar folk, they suffer, you know, hours and family yeah. life and whatnot and all this stuff, you know, that's my niche. These are my people. If I can, you know, help them in any way, man, I'm pumped. The podcast started out as one thing and it's turned into something else. And, you know, it's pretty crazy watching back and watching this thing evolve, you know?
And I love this because this is where it's funny that we found each other. I believe that's a divine appointment. See, I'm a man of faith. Like I said, yeah. I don't preach on podcasts because actually I feel like sometimes we have too many people preaching. I know that's probably another topic. I don't have any problem with it, but I think we need more conversation, right? Instead of like, this is it. This is what you got to do. No, this is me. And this is what I'm going through, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that I think a lot of times, like you said, there's just these nuggets of knowledge that are just existing just beyond our comfort zone. It just beyond. And I think that, oh, that's cool. I don't know what that was. That was fun.
That's through your phone. You got an iPhone, right?
Ooh, I got fireworks and a thumb up. That's cool. That was like part of it. But it, yeah, so no, and that's so true, man. And I think like for me, like I said, I'm a guy who loves humor. I love being silly or I'm too serious all the time because I did grow up in this blue collar family. Like I worked with my dad every single summer doing electrical work. And I'm glad that I did. But like I saw what it took to run a business. Like he ran his own business. My mom ran his business with him and then ran another business on this, like, and she gave up a big job to work in a rental company as an office manager because she wanted to raise me the right way. And so, because she, again, like I told you the story about my grandpa earlier, you know, my grandma just passed away, and she got remarried. And my grandpa that I actually grew up with was the hardest working blue collar dude I've ever seen. He wasn't my paternal grandfather. Like I told you, he was gone about 37 years old, but this guy, his name was Dick as well, which is pretty cool for me. Yeah, I got a bracelet with it and I wear it and I keep it because I want to channel his blue collar energy.
Hold up. You got some Dick around your wrist?
I do. I do. I don't have it on right now. I should have worn it, but it's over here. It's a silver bracelet and it's got his name on it engraved on it. And so nice. And that's what you need. That's your new like apparel line.
Hell yeah. Oh, I got my own merch line and I
want to talk about that after I get done with my monologue. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I'm sorry. I'm monologuing. Blah. No, but like this idea of being blue collar and working hard, like these are my people. And that's the thing. Like my dad, my grandpa, everybody worked hard. And then you know what they did? They used that and they paid for my college. And they said, Sean, we don't want you to have debt. We want you to go to school to be a teacher because I don't want you to have to do everything that I did. And there's something powerful about this blue collar mindset. I mean, my family, you know, just never stopped working, but there also comes a point where we need to support those types of people because to your point and the point I'm trying to make, oftentimes they don't ask for help. My grandpa never asked for help. You know, he was going through things. And if we can just get one person listening to this and be like, dude, I need to get a little bit of help. You know, there's some mental illness in my family, but there's nothing wrong with the mental illness. Like, let's unstigmatize that. Like, we're all uniquely created, in my opinion, the way we were designed to be. And so that's something that I think is really important. But
Amen to that, brother. Man, I love how like you're touching on other things and I'm going back to touch on the NICU thing, dude.
Dude, let's go back, man. Let's do it, dude. Like that's what we're all about. This is a conversation. I think you and I are actually probably really good at this together. We're like,
oh man. Yeah. Well, you got a podcast. I got a podcast, right? I like to talk. You obviously like to talk, you know, dude, it's perfect, man. So the NICU, my daughter was born, my oldest daughter was born 5 weeks early. Right. Ooh. She was also, you know, maybe a little bigger than my hand, but she was 5 pounds.
Right.
And, you know, our NICU, you know, I don't know what yours was like, but our NICU, private room, mm-hmm. right? Not a lot of NICUs are like that. You're mm-hmm. in a room with like 5-6 other mm-hmm. families, you know, private room, crazy. I remember, you know, my wife, I was actually in a job interview because, you know, I was looking for another job and I was in a job interview and my wife's like, hey, she had to walk to the hospital. I took the car, but her work, she worked right up until the day she gave birth, right? So her job, her work was only, you know, three blocks away from the hospital.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. Oh, and we lived like on the other side of the hospital too. We lived 2 minutes from the hospital, which helps.
That's
with
nice, yeah.
The end of the story here. But so she walked to the hospital. She was having hypertension and whatnot. It was time, right? And the doctor said, "You're not leaving here until this baby comes out, right? Like, we're gonna induce you this weekend if we have to." So she texts me this, and I'm like, "Oh shit." I'm like, "I gotta go. My wife's giving birth. She's in labor, whatever." And the guy, or I can't, yeah, the guy's like, "You don't want this job?" I'm like, "Not if it means I gotta miss this, right?" And so, you know, I still had a job, right? So it didn't bother me. So I get there, and you know, we spent Friday night in the hospital, and they did the balloon thing. They tried to induce her, and you know, she wants to do a C-section anyways, right? So she's like, "You know what, like, C-section this, you know, it's not going to come, the baby's not going to come this way. It's 5 weeks early. It's not too bad, but like still, it's still, I guess a week and a half, 2 weeks before they really, like, you know, 3 weeks early is nothing. 5 weeks early, still a little early." Right. So, we get there, you know, in the morning, she's like, "All right, we're going to do it. We're going to do it today." Right. Like, we're doing it today. She wants a C-section, you know, if she wanted to wait to deliver it naturally, you know, we could wait all weekend, but she said C-section, so it's coming. My wife's like, "You go get something to eat, right? And by the time you get back, we'll be good to go." So I'm like, "All right." So I go downstairs, I get a bite to eat. She texts me, I sit down, I'm just about to eat. She's like, "It's time." I'm like, "Fuck." I get up, I throw the food away, I go upstairs. There's still like another 2.5 hours, right? And I was like, "Fuck yeah," you know, like, so whatever, you know. She comes out and she's really jaundiced and whatnot. And they're like, "Hey, 5 weeks, right to the NICU," right? And so my wife, she had to go off to the recovery room. They're like, no, "You're coming with us to the NICU," you know.
You're like,
I got to hold my kid, right? Like, right away, right? So she's like this little baby, and I'm like, "What do I do with this thing? This thing gonna break this thing, right?" My mother-in-law, she flew in that morning. She showed up like 20 minutes after the kid was born, right? It was cool the way that it worked, actually. And we're doing skin to skin, and this kid is wiggling around, right? You know, and next thing I know, she's sideways and she's trying to latch onto my boot.
Oh no.
I'm like, "Help. Help!" We're both confused here, right? I don't know what's going on. I couldn't move her back. I didn't know how, right? Like, she's just this tiny thing. We went to see Thor Ragnarok about a month later. It came out, and we took her with us, right? We're just like, you know, well, our life's forever changed. We can't just get up and go to the movies anymore, you know, and whatnot. We're taking her with us, right? She spent 11 days in the NICU anyways. Before I move on, she spent 11 days in the NICU. That NICU experience is, you know, wild. You had a month and a bit in there.
Yeah.
We had 11 days. When you're in there, you're like, "My kid has jaundice and, you know, just has to get over this and has a feeding tube in her nose right now."
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's tiny. You look around. This kid needs to have heart surgery.
Yep.
This kid's been in here for a year. This kid's parents don't come and visit him hardly ever. This kid is, you know, living. This is day one, this is day two, this is day three, right? And they're just counting, "Okay, you survived another day."
Yep.
Beautiful, right?
Right.
We're just like looking around, we're counting our blessings. Our kid just has jaundice and is born 5 weeks early, you know, like, she's born 11 days later, put her in the car seat, we're out of there, right? Some of those kids, I don't know if they ever made it out. I don't know how long they were in there for. They could have been in there for a lot longer. And you know that you start getting,
Yeah, I know. The emotions are big, aren't they, in those situations?
They're huge. They're huge, man.
Man, if we could just help those kids, dude, can you imagine if we could use our platforms to help those kids, man?
Oh, man. We probably come up with something. We go see, back to the movies. We go see Thor Ragnarok. She's the size of the pop cup. Or no, I think the pop cup was a little bigger than her.
Right. I know that.
The pop cup was a little bigger than her. The popcorn was definitely a little bigger than her.
Yeah.
And she just slept the entire time. She's a preemie. All they do is sleep, right?
Yep.
So, you know, she didn't wake up. The movie didn't even phase her, right? I was like, "Wow, man, I can get used to this."
You're like, "I got the coolest baby ever."
Yeah, it's cool, right? didn't stay that way forever, right? You know, and then we have our second kid. Our kid is our youngest. She's 5, right? Full term, right? And we're like, oh yeah, we got this parenting thing unlocked. We had one, the other one,
here we go.
The book's been written. We're good, right? whole new book, right? Like, she full term. She came out, you know, not wanting. She was holding on to the ribs, didn't want to come out. She was like, you know,
no, keep and, me in there.
Yeah, they did another C-section to bring the table down. They had to cut. I heard them. I watched both, by the way. I heard them stretching or cutting open that same C-section mark. The tearing. Yeah. Ooh, right?
I know. I'm with you. I was there. But oh, I know.
Yeah.
Takes you back.
Doctor had to bring the table down, get on top of my wife, and, like, you know, and then had to grab the vacuum and, like, suck this kid out pretty much, right? Like, ooh, a little late for an abortion, you know? Like,
yeah.
Jeez. The vacuum is.
Yeah.
She came out, man, and, like, just a ball of fucking rage, you know? Just
yeah,
like,
she was ready for the world, dude. Man, but not.
Dude, when I tell you this kid, you know, she's a COVID baby, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those kids are built different. They were formed, they were built, they were raised on rage, right?
Mm-hmm.
And these kids, man, oh my God, two very different kids, you know? I'm makes me kind of nervous for a third, you know? Like,
I'm
going to get a mix of both in a third, you know?
You know, that's interesting. Our middle child, our middle girl, like, she gets up early. She was up with me this morning. And she's like, she gets, we call her 0 to 60. So, it's like a Talladega Nights reference, like when you're driving, you know, if you ain't first, you're last. And then at the end, he tells her, at the end, he says, well, no, you could be like 6th, 7th, 8th, whatever. Well, my daughter doesn't understand that part. She's just, if you ain't first, you're last. You know what I'm saying? My feet hit the floor, and, like, I swear to God, she's right there beside me like this. I'm like, okay, what in the world just happened? Like, it's 5:30. How did you know? If I get a 5:30, 4:30, 6:30, she's right there. You know what I'm saying? But she's just like yours, man. It's like, but at the same time, I don't think my life would be the same without her in a very, very, like, bad way. I'd be terrible. She has refined me because, like, when she's having a meltdown or screaming at me, I'm thinking to myself, ooh, maybe I see a little bit of myself in there. Maybe I need to navigate. Maybe I handled something and she's just expressing how I need to work on myself. It helps refine us, doesn't it? Yeah. And so, but yeah, I mean, I know, dude, and we got to have some fun with those experiences because, like, there's some trauma induced stuff as dads. Like, man, I was listening to what it was, like, Trey Kennedy, that comedian that does parenting stuff. I don't know if that's his name or not, but he's funny, dude. He talks about being a, like, what it was life was like before being a parent and after. Dude, it's spot on, man. Like, we need to enjoy these experiences because there's some stuff inside of it that's not pretty. You know what I mean? But, like, we can enjoy those experiences, and each one of our kids is going to refine us different. So I can't wait to hear about, you know, when you do have your third, how that happens. Because our littlest one, man, she's I thought the middle one was tough. The little one's bringing – she brings some energy. You know what I mean?
Man, that scares me. You know, that scares me. My youngest, she's going to spend some time in jail one day.
Yeah, I worry the same thing.
And I'm proud of her for it. You know, like, you know, this kid, you know, they both got this light to them, right? This independence kind of thing, right? And, you know, I don't want to snuff it out.
Mm-hmm.
It's very hard to parent. It's very hard to parent that kind of character, right? Mm-hmm. But, like, you snuff it out just because you don't want to parent it, and then you do some damage later on down the line there, and it's just like, you know what? Like, as much as this is causing headaches and stuff like that, you know, sometimes you just gotta laugh, right? And it's just like, you know, like, she's a character, man. She's, you know, I'll be more than honored to be sitting next to her prison cell chatting with her one day, you know, like, she's going. It's funny.
I've often said that to my wife. I'm like, you know, I'm prepared for whatever circumstance, but I'm also not, you know what I mean? Like, I'm like, you know what though? Like, if I can teach them, same thing you just said, like, the light in you has got to be stronger than the darkness around you. And, like, light and dark are one of those interesting things. Cause, like, some people's light and some people's dark aren't the same thing. Right. But at the same time, like, you want your kid to shine, man. You don't want to squelch them. You know, and I think that's a big thing. Like, that's why I started that Just Called Out podcast too, man. Like, man, I got to learn from other dads because, like, I feel like sometimes, like, you know, I don't know. Like, sometimes I, like, can either overparent or underparent, right? Like, I don't know. I don't know what the right way to say that is. But, like, all we got to do is just listen to other dads and realize, like, hey, let's quit judging everybody, right? And let's just, like, listen to each other and be like, ooh, maybe that's kind of a – maybe I needed to hear that from Dick today. The way you said that, I'm like, ooh, I don't want to squelch my daughter's light, you know, when she's screaming at me in the grocery store because she didn't get a – you know, the thing that she wanted, and I'm thinking it's a reflection on me. But what if it isn't? What if it isn't? What if it's just an experience that she's having and I need to just help her through?
Yeah. Well, there's something that I say in the blue collar world at work, right? With new people, right? That are having a hard time getting it or understanding it. And, you know, back in the day, not that far back in the day, we used to make fun of them, call them names, you know, show them a little tough love, more coaching, less criticism, right? And that's something I learned from my boss, you know, more coaching, less criticism. Right. And that's changed so much in me. He said a few things. My boss is incredible. He's said so many things to me that, you know, the way I work is not the way other people work. Right. And so, you know, I was complaining about it one day. I'm like, man, like this person, you know, like I can't work with them. We're not on the same level. And he's like, man, there's a reason why racehorses wear blinders. Okay. He's like, run your race, bro. He's like, you know, that horse isn't going to run the same race you're running. Run your race. And that's changed so much. You know, I used to judge people based off their work ethic, not as them as human beings. Right. Cause I spent all my time at work.
Run your race, choose joy.
Wow.
That's good advice from him.
Damn, yeah, it's crazy. Hey, do you know what viscosity is?
No, but I want to know.
So viscosity is, you know, the thickness of a fluid, right? How
thick. Okay, gotcha. Yeah, yep.
Where I'm going with that is the podcast is sponsored by the Mudman, right? The Mudman deals in, you know, on the rig when they're drilling. Yeah, mm-hmm. You know, the fluid sometimes it needs to be thicker, sometimes it needs to be thinner, right? And you know, it helps with, you know, drilling and how much fluid you get back, and you know what, some of you don't want to lose circulation, right? So the Mudman, he deals in that for all your liquid, for all your drilling fluid and all your laboratory testing equipment needs. You know, the Mudman's got your back. And you know, that guy's been so amazing to me. You know, like episode 14, he came to me, let's go on a 5-episode run. I'll get you a mic and a headset, make your sound quality better. And I was like, hell yeah, man, let's do this. Let's do this. Go. Right? It was supposed to be a 5-episode run. Here we are 120 episodes later.
Awesome.
And well, yeah, 114 episodes later, actually. 114 episodes later, here we are. It's 114 weeks. It's a year and a half. And, you know, last summer he's like, how can we make this show better? Right. And I couldn't edit worse shit. There was no,
I know the feeling.
Couldn't do it. My laptop was not good. I record and edit and do everything. I was able to get off the phone. He bought me a laptop. He bought me a MacBook Pro. And I very quickly learned, hey man, this is tech. This could be tech that benefits you in a crazy way. You know, the phone was ringing, I'd lose the podcast. Not enough space on my phone, I'd lose the podcast. You know, and so now I do everything off this MacBook Pro, man. It's an incredible tool to have for the podcast. You know, I don't have to download all the files to my phone now. And, you know, they got to the point where I would have to go and delete episodes of the podcast to room for others, and I'd lose the audio. Well, on the MacBook, I just save it to my MacBook. I got a photo. I got a file for the video, file for the audio. I put it in there. I never have to lose another episode again.
Awesome.
Right? Yeah, it's pretty crazy. There are older episodes that I look back on that I wish I had the audio for, that I wish I could go back and listen to. Well, I can go listen. We're still online, but I just don't have copies, right? And you know, there's one in particular that maybe I deleted a little prematurely that, you know, I never really got to listen to. I've listened to it online, but I've never got to go back, listen to it, and pick and pull from it, right? So, yeah, shout out to the Mudman for all your drilling, for all your laboratory testing needs and stuff like that. www.mudmanmarket.com. I love that guy. Shout out to
sounds that. Like an incredible dude. I mean, he sounds like somebody who knows the mission of the podcast too, right? Like, don't you love that when people see your mission and they're like, dude, let me help you unlock a little bit of that? Because, dude, doing this podcast game is hard, man. I mean, like I said, I'm doing it. I'm trying to reset my password right now just for fun because we're on I'm just like, this is kind of funny. Why not? And there's like 900 steps to reset your password on a real side note.
Yeah, dude.
So we should like call Apple Live while we're, no, I'm kidding. I'm not going to do that.
We should, man. We should.
Funny. No, like, because like, then you're like talking and you're trying to do 9 things and then your kid steals your phone or something.
Yeah.
You know,
copy paste on the MacBook. You're going to find out the MacBook's keyboards and whatnot. You know how most computers, like your X and your minimize, are off on your top right hand while the Apple's on the top left hand, and you know they disappear. And dude, the Apple's incredible. Have a lot of fun with it. You're gonna have iMovie on there. You're gonna have tons of things, that GarageBand. You're gonna have tons of things to help your podcast with editing that already are there. You don't need to go looking for anything. That's else cool. Yeah, man. And speaking of the Mudman, you said you sounds like he understands the mission, man. I had a guy that on the pod, well, I didn't have him on. I had a guy in mind for the podcast, but I couldn't find him anywhere on the internet. You know, Mike Williams, part of the Deepwater Horizon accident. You know, 11 people died. I wanted him on the podcast, right? Couldn't find him anywhere. Found his wife, but thought it was weird to message her.
Yeah.
Like I left that alone. And he's worked everywhere. He knows everyone in the industry. He's like, tell me who it is afterwards, and I'll see what I can do. Within 8 hours, that guy had Mike's phone number for me. Nice. And so I called him, and the Mudman said, if you can get that guy to say yes, he's like, that's one you do in person. The Mudman will fly you there.
What?
Yeah, yeah. So Mike, it's been a year and a bit. Mike, he told me to call him back in 2 weeks. I did. He blocked my number. So yeah, Mike and I, we don't, I've tried to call him from other people's numbers because I didn't get a no. Blocking my number wasn't telling me no. It was just saying, you know, I blocked your number, right? So challenge is on you now to find me. So like, I called him from everyone else's phone that I could find. He might have all of Canada blocked at this point. So
wow. Yeah. Jeez. Yeah, I don't know a ton about the incident or whatever, but it sounds serious.
Normal rig blew up in the Gulf of Mexico. And wow. It was one of the biggest, natural disasters in the world. And 11 people died. And Mike Williams, Mark Wahlberg played him in the movie.
Okay, I need to see this. Okay, wow. Geez, that's kind of serious. That's kind of big.
It's called Deepwater Horizon. Is it called?
I feel like I've heard that name. I feel like I've heard that title before.
Yeah, Deepwater Horizon is a movie. Yeah, it's a fantastic movie.
Wow.
He left the industry afterwards.
Sounds serious. But I bet it's hard to talk about. Like, to your point, like, Mike probably has a hard time talking about that.
Oh, dude, I completely understand why he doesn't want to do it. 100%. I get it. You know,
yeah.
I just thought I could maybe convince him a little bit.
Yeah.
And you know, I get it. There's no hard feelings there, right? Like, I understand. Sure. A target guest for me on my podcast, Blue Collar and whatnot. I wanted him for episode 50, didn't get him. Wanted him for episode 100, didn't get him. Not minimizing the impact those two episodes had, but
who I
ended up having.
Right.
Episode 100 was incredible. I wanted Mike Rowe and, you know, Dirty Jobs Mike Rowe. And
that'd be awesome.
Dude has his own podcast, got his own whiskey line. He's got a TV show. He's super busy, you know, like, but I was sending him emails, tagging him in videos, yada, 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 and thinking, oh, he'll never, ever come on someone like mine's podcast, right?
But yeah, I know the feeling.
I was like, cool, Joe Rogan. That's Joe Rogan, right? I understand that. Then he shows up on somebody's podcast that's nobody. That's just a plain Jane like me, you know, showed up on their podcast. So maybe being persistent. Key, right, so
let's keep going, man. I've been watching that show too. I'll help you out with that. That'd be cool.
Yeah man. So your podcast, how many episodes deep are you?
30 episodes deep. So we started eight months ago when my grandma passed away. A week afterwards, I just recorded my thoughts or feelings about it, because it was like the last of my grandparents that had passed away, so it was kind of a generational thing, and I had gone through that, like I said, that panic attack moment. So yeah, so we're like 30 episodes in. I've been blown away, to be honest with you. Like, even the fact that I'm like talking to you, right? So like, we just started on socials. My socials are pretty small. Threads is blowing up. We're like over 1,000 on there, you know, in terms of followers, which is cool in 8 months. Like, that's not too bad. But like Instagram and all those things, like, I don't know how to use, you know what I mean? TikTok, all that stuff.
We'll get there, man.
So, and like, I honestly, yeah. So it's relatively new for me. And it's really a cool experience because I'm talking to dads from all across the country, all across the world, you know, just like you and I, who are living differently, but the same. And I think that's my goal with the podcast, is to unite people around this commonality of being a dad. Because no matter what walk of life you're in, whether you're blue collar, no matter what belief system you have, no matter what, if you're a dad, we share things in common. And one of those things is this mental health, right? That we need to talk about things. We don't always like need to talk about mental health, like, hey, this is how I'm feeling. But instead, sometimes just talking like you and I are is a form of therapy. It's a form of just like, I'm going to leave here smiling and happy and feeling like I've got a friend. And I think a lot of men specifically, we don't know how to make friends. I know it's terrible to say that, but we're kind of lone wolves. I think Morgan Wallen says it this way. He says, I'm a coyote in a field of wolves. And I love that song. It's, you know, and it talks about in that song, you know, just about how he feels a little bit crazy, right? Okay. But this idea that like everybody feels similar, right? So I think that that's the idea. So that's where we're at with it, man. We're getting dads on that help play with your kids better in the backyard. I do trick shots to help promote that. We're getting dads on that like are entrepreneurs. We're getting dads on that are people that have written books, New York Times bestselling books. We got dads that are musicians coming on. Working on getting my buddy, who's the lead singer for 21 Pilots, to come on.
That's cool.
Yeah, I just hung out with him this summer.
Do your thing, 21.
So Tyler and I are buddies. We're not close anymore, but we grew up together. Second grade, we sat by each other. I'm in a Bible study with his dad, and so I got to chat with him. I don't know if you know 21 Pilots or not, but
of course. Of course.
Yeah. So Tyler's a dad of three, so I'm like giving him. I'm like, come on, man, come on the podcast. That would help out a ton. So like I'd hope to get musicians too, because I want to break the stigma that like fame and fortune and all those things can make you a worse or a better dad. I just want everybody to come together and say, I'm a dad. And that's just my mission. Obviously it'd be cool to do it for moms too, but it's just, you know, that's not my calling, but man, I think dads need community.
Absolutely, man. I don't know if you've listened to the Dad Bods and Beards podcast. You should check that out. Those guys, they're dads, obviously. They go through it. There was a whole like month of their podcast that was dark, right? And they came out of one day like, hey man, this last month has been hard on both of us. We're both going through it. They're two buddies. One owns a like beard place and beard care place, and the other one's a blue collar worker, Logan, actually. And I had him on the podcast.
Cool.
And he said, you know, men. He tried to say, at first, he's like, men don't have a lot of space. But then he's like, men have a lot of space, but men don't have a lot of healthy space,
mm-hmm.
right? They don't have a lot of healthy space in this world. So, like, you know, the fact that we're here doing this, you know, we've created this, you've created what you've created, you know, we're creating that healthy space, right?
Sorry.
A place where, you know, where we can talk, we can come together and we can be like, hey, you know, our parents didn't have this. Maybe if my dad had a place where he could feel safe, mm-hmm. and talk and had like this incredible platform, he could have done something with it, right?
Yeah.
And you know, I always said that, yeah, I blame my dad for a lot of things over the last, you know, 30 years. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't until those last 3 months when I started going through it, mm-hmm. or longer than that, but when the last 3 months
you realized you were going through it, yeah,
through it, that mm-hmm. I'm like, you know, and watching my wife and how she's just leaned into me so much harder. Mm-hmm. And she said something to me where it was like, I fought you for you every day because no one else was going to do it. And I made that video. I made that into a video, and I was laying in her lap and she was like rubbing my hair. Mm-hmm. When she said that, and that hit me, that made me fucking tear up. That just hit mm-hmm. me. Mm-hmm. And so I made it into a video. I laid back mm-hmm. into her lap. I changed the angle a little bit. She's rubbing me, and I put that in there. And I thought men needed to see that, needed to hear that. Right. And, you know, it did 2 million views on Facebook, which I did not expect.
Wow.
I didn't care about the views. I still don't care about that. Right. Yeah. The message was out there, and the amount of men that messaged me and said, man, like, that's incredible. You know, mm-hmm. like my wife, she was there for me through this, yada, yada, yada. There was a lot of people on there that were like, be a man, grow up, you know.
They can take a hike is what I tell those people. Get out of here, right?
Like, yeah, get out of here.
Get out of here, man.
And So the one guy on there was crusading in the comments against people like that. I'm like, hey man, I get what you're doing, but either these men, they are scared. They haven't gone through it yet, mm-hmm. or they are going through it and they're just lashing out because they don't know how to handle it. Right. And you know, back to my original point on that is
beautiful.
If my dad had someone like my wife to lean into him, you know, I think my dad was discarded way too easily. Mm-hmm. I think people were going by the time he got married to his last wife and divorced, he did some pretty scummy shit, but I think he was discarded and she was going through her own stuff too. Mentally, she was going through her own stuff. Maybe she couldn't handle it either, but like, I think, you know, my dad was easily discarded mm-hmm. and, you know, instead of throwing him out to the curb, pull him in more.
Yeah.
Right. The more he resisted you, the more you should have brought him in. Right.
For sure.
And, you know, I'm guilty of that too. You know, like I said some shit to him and, you know, whatnot. My dad, there's with me and him, there's a couple of things there that I don't think are forgivable.
Sure.
So, you know, for me, it's boundaries and putting that there. I have a family that I got to protect. Right. So like, you know, I don't foresee there being anything there for us in the future, but like, you know, there are people there that he doesn't have that kind of relationship with that, you mm-hmm. know, I think, and who knows what he did to them too. Right.
Sure.
So maybe they're also setting healthy boundaries, but I definitely think that, you know, before it got to this point, you know, there was definitely another path that could have been taken. So,
yeah. What if vulnerability is the greatest form of masculinity? What if it is?
Boom.
What if Boom. It is?
I've said,
I mean, seriously, like, I mean, and I mean that, like, not like we are like vulnerable and talking about our feelings all the time, but just have a moment of vulnerability yeah. allows you the strength for today. And I think, like, man, your dad needed that. And I need that too, man. Cause sometimes I think we block our progress and we get in the way of it or we pause it or whatever. And we never regain it because we aren't vulnerable. And like, I think having that space with your wife is just amazing. And, if any men are listening to this, like, and they don't have that kind of support system, you need to find one. I have the same thing with my wife. You know, I know what I've been through. There's been a couple moments where I've had to call out to her and I've had to tell her, hey, I'm not okay right now. Can you just stand here with me? And yeah. sometimes that's all it takes. Can you just stand there? And that's what Just Call Dad, the podcast, wants to do for men, is we want to just stand with you. We want to stand with you and then you go do what you need to do. And I think that's what you're trying to do too. And like, at the end of the day, if we can do that for other men and encourage them to find somebody around to call, right? Like, to your point, our number, sometimes we block people's numbers. Go back to your original point that we talked about before this, that we should not be blocking, but we should be calling. And I think that that's super powerful.
Boom. You know, my number, my dad knows my number. He knows how to get a hold of me. I know my dad's number. It's been the same since I was 12, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, those communication lines are very much open. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, I never blocked him. He never blocked me. I don't know if he never blocked me, but I never blocked him. Right.
Right.
I called him out on his shit about six yeah. years ago. I called him out on his shit and, you know, he messaged me back right away. He's like, I love you too, son. Right. Like, and I'm like, I never said I didn't love you.
Right.
You know, I'm saying I, cause I love the fuck out of you, but mm-hmm. you know, it's because I love you that I'm here.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Turned my back and walked away. That was the last mm-hmm. thing we said to each other, right? So it's pretty
powerful, man.
Pretty powerful, man. You know, and he's done some shit, but and you know, just my childhood there, you know. I said this last week, you know. I recently went on a road trip. We went out east, my sister got married. We drove out there, we drove through the States, we came down south through Canada, and then like where we're at in Canada, we went to the US, mm-hmm. Minneapolis, Chicago, Detroit, went up, came over, took my kids to the water park capital of the world, mm-hmm. took them to Peppa Pig land in Detroit on nice. The way there. Cool. It was very cool.
Sick.
And I saw a lot of people that I never got to see before. I haven't seen in a long time. I met family I have never met before. And, you know, yeah, so that was pretty interesting. But the one thing that really hit me was, and I don't know why it didn't hit me sooner, because I've done a lot of driving. We drive 10, 11 hours a day, mm-hmm. right? When my parents split up, my mom moved 8 hours away, right? And no My dad had two kids that went with her, and I went with my dad. No effort was made to see each other more. Mm. 8 hours is not a lot of driving.
Yeah.
Right? 8 hours is not. You know, he would drive 8 hours for other things. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
8 hours to keep your kids, to see your kids, and to, you know, keep that connection going. None of that was made. Maybe once or twice a year. You know, and that kind of pissed me off a little
bit.
I was driving. I'm like, I said to my wife, I said that to her, and I'm like, fuck, I'm a little mad now. And like, yeah, I had tears in my eyes, right? I'm like, you know what? Like, yeah. But like, you know, also, one thing I've learned from my wife and through therapy, journaling is powerful.
It is powerful.
Right. And I journal almost every day now. And, you know, that's in my journal. I wrote that down in my journal. I'm like, you know what really pissed me off today? And then, you know, I got into that. And, oh, man, it's wild. It's wild, man. It's, yeah, I can't say that word enough. It's just wild.
That's beautiful. And I think that's so important. And I think, like, as dads, we don't have a lot of time. Like, even, like, right now, when I get off here, I've got to go get packing for a road trip. We're going to drive to Myrtle Beach.
Oh.
And we don't take vacations much because we don't really have the extra cash flow to do that. You know what I mean? So like we have to save up for them. Yeah. My daughter thinks we're going to Disney next year. So apparently I got to take out a second, loan on the house. Yeah. But no, it's to your point, like what we choose to do or we choose to spend our time, like that really does show who we are. Right. And I think like we all have choices to make. And I think the big thing I'd say kind of as we get to the point, feels like we're kind of getting to a pause here is like for dads is like, you're either teaching or allowing it in your life. And so I guess to your point, like journaling helps me figure out what am I teaching myself to do or like training myself and what am I just allowing? And just like one of the things I want to allow myself to do more is like enjoy time with my kids, you know, and that's something I want to soak up.
Absolutely, man. I've gotten 3 months of that, you know, recovering from this injury. I'm not going to keep you too much longer here, man. You got to go packing. It's 9:30.
I do,
You know,
my wife just texted me, by the way. It's funny because you know, remember how you said it interrupts? It comes down the screen, it goes, all done, ? And I know what that means is the kids are about to lose their minds.
Upstairs. So right now, you know, it's Saturday, the kids are off school. My wife, you know, for the last 3 months, she's had to do everything. I'm a little bit more mobile now. Yep. She said, the moment you become more mobile, I'm sleeping in.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, my kids are gonna get up here soon too, and I got all their breakfast sorted out and ready for them to go so they don't have to come down and bother us. But I'm gonna let you go too so you can get packing and spend time with your family and enjoy Myrtle Beach. But I like to end the podcast with one last question.
I'm ready.
You know, Mount Rushmore has four of the most influential people on the rock, right? Or depending who you ask. Yeah. If you could have your own Mount Rushmore, four people that you look up to and inspired you or that have inspired you, who would be on your rock and why?
Yeah, so the first person would be my mom. I'm a good emotion about that. So she's a little Italian lady. She's got a ton of passion and she carries everybody's burdens for them. And so I could have very easily named my podcast, just call mom. Because honestly, I call her for more than I call my dad for. But my dad, I see a lot of myself in. So it'd be my mom would be the first person that would be on there. There's something special about being an only child and being a, you know, having a mom that supports you. So that would be the first person that would be on that. And that's kind of crazy because a lot of my people on Mount Rushmore are females in my life. So my grandma would be the next one. So losing my grandma derailed me because she would call me out my whole life. She didn't let me get away with anything. I mean, she would say things to me that hurt and I'd be like, oh, but like I loved her. She'd drive 40 miles per hour around a curve, blaring George Strait and telling me that's how you drive. While the sweepers in the back, because she cleaned houses, would be flying and banging around the back of her station wagon. But like, she loved me and she was at everything. So my mom and my grandma would 100% be my first two people that would be on that. And the next person after that would be my wife, right? Because now all of a sudden I have my mom, my grandma, but now I've got this stable woman in my life that is my balance. She's my steady and she's the most important person that's on there. And the last person is all my daughters. They're all going to be together in their little faces. And so it's crazy because, you know, I think sometimes we live in a world where I think there'd be men on my Mount Rushmore, but the women in my life are there. And my girls, man, they teach me every day how to be more patient, more
kind. I feel that.
And so that's my Mount Rushmore. And I tell my dad, sorry, you didn't make the cut. You know what I mean? And someday, like, I it doesn't, not in a negative way, but like, I mean, he's my, you know, we're closer now than we've ever been. But yeah, that's my Mount Rushmore. And so, like, for me, like, my wife is the center of that because, you know, she's taught me what it means to be patient. She's taught me what it means to listen. And man, seeing her go through what she went through to give birth to our girls, number one. But then with this experience, like, if I were have been the woman in that situation and gone through what she went through, dude, I'd be a mess. Like, I wouldn't have survived. Are you kidding me? Like, yeah. Are we serious? And so, like, dude, I was blown away. So that's my Mount Rushmore. And I know they're all females, but I think that's a shout out to the women in my life.
Whatever. Good for you, man. That's huge, dude. Thanks for coming on, bro. You know, like, this is, you know, as you know, it's probably your baby. This is my baby now too. Right. And
yeah. You
know, it takes, I get nervous to record, right?
Like, yeah, I know.
Like, do I want to do this?
You know? Yeah.
And you know, I get nervous to record. It's been 2.5 years, man. And I'm still that way. And then I get excited on podcast release day. And, you know, I'm like counting down the hours. There's like 8 hours. There's 4 hours. There's two. Here we go. You know, and I can't wait to share that link out. And then, you know, I don't care about numbers. Like, the podcast does really well, but I don't care. Podcasting's a long game, right? You're in a long game. Shout out to Harbinger, who, you know, I when the numbers are going down, Harbinger showed me a couple months ago now, you know, someone who follows me on TikTok. She's coming on the podcast, by the way, but she showed me, you know, like, you know, when the numbers start getting a little stagnant, all you need to do is tap into another group of people that haven't heard the podcast yet.
Yep.
And then it takes off again, right?
It does.
The podcast is there forever. You know, it doesn't need to be a rate. It doesn't need to be success right now.
No, it doesn't. It's an investment.
Someone's going to find it, share it, listen to it. You know, it's like anything, right? You're watering it and you're going to watch that plant grow, you know? And it's like raising children. man. Man, thanks for coming on, dude. You go enjoy your trip to Myrtle Beach with your family and you have a good one, man.
Hey, you too, man. Thanks for your time. I love this. I love your energy, man.
All right. Yeah. And I'm going to send you a list of podcasts to listen to on your drive or when you got the time, because you probably listen to fucking kids music or having
chats. Melon and Disney Princess. But I can sing a really good rendition of many princess songs. We don't need to do that now, but you and I could probably do that on another. We could duet, I'm sure, with all we have.
Oh, man. We're going to get
let it go. We could let it go.
We'll do another episode of the podcast of just us singing.
People are gonna be like, yes or no, we'll just see.
Just Disney songs.
I'm in.
Straight up Disney songs. Yeah. All right, man. Hey,
all right, man.
Sean, stay all frosty, right. Brother,
we'll do.
Hey, the thumbs up is back.
Fireworks, can I get fireworks again?
Boom.
I don't know how that happened.
I think it worked.